Welcome to the AUSM Connections Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Brennan. My guests today are our co-ministers, Reverend Tobias Page and Reverend Cherry Eckelbarger. We are recording this podcast on May 20th, 2025. In less than a month, they will be leaving AUSM. But this podcast episode is not about saying goodbye. It's really about their time here at Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo. Welcome, Revs TNTV. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Rev Tobias, I've got the first question for you because you were here first. Tell our listeners about how you came to be our worship minister before you were even ordained as a minister. I can remember people calling you Rev Tobias and you would say, not quite yet. That was in early 2023.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny because it feels like a really long time ago now, and I hope that I can remember it clearly. Yes, I was not currently looking for a ministry position. I was finishing up at Star King and figuring out what I was going to do. And I got the invitation to be a gap minister. That's what we ended up calling it, to be a gap minister for worship only, because at the time you had Reverend Stephanie Atzbach-Dale doing some of the critical pastoral care ministry. I agreed to come for 5 months and we did a 5 month contract for worship only. That was when you were searching for an interim through the EUA process. I was ordained by the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Redwood City in May of 2023. So a couple of months in, yes, a number of folks from this congregation came and helped out in that service and were ushers, the sacred song circle sang, and it was really meaningful to have AUSM there with me when I was ordained. When you didn't connect with the interim through the UA process, then we revised the contracts into what we have.
And Rev Cherry, you started October 1st of that year, I remember. So how did a non-Unitarian Universalist end up being a co-minister at a church?
I know people. I knew a UUA minister in Reno named Karen Foster. There's a number of UUA ministers that started with the UUA after serving in the MCC, which is my denomination, growing community churches. I, of course, knew Ben because of a part of the Peninsula Solidarity Network, and Tobias, too, was a part of that group. I was familiar with you. I knew that you were looking for someone and that you'd been in a period of transition. We talked as pastors, too. And some people thought that that might be an interesting thing for me to pursue and that I might be a good fit. I reached out and you all told me no. Since I was the UA minister, you were at a search process. But again, you ended up in a position where you didn't have someone from the UA to do it. And some people must have said nice things about me. They talked to me about the position. And through a series of conversations, we discovered that Tobias loved what she was doing. And my strongest skill set were in some of the things that she didn't enjoy.
Had you spoken at this church before? Had you given sermons at this church? I was pretty sure I remembered that.
Yeah, I'd done some guest preaching for AUSM. And I practically knew several members because I was a part of the LGBTQ Commission in San Mateo County. And so I actually knew some members.
Rev Tobias, you first started as the worship minister and Rev Stephanie was doing the pastoral care part of that job. But eventually, you took over pastoral care too. Did that happen because Terry was coming?
Yeah. So what happened was we were talking about doing a shared ministry, two ministry, and having three ministers was just going to be too much. The search team decided to consolidate worship and pastoral care into one position and the rest of it into another position. I don't think that having a third minister on board was ever really seriously considered. Yeah.
Right. The vision was that Rev Tobias just described was she was doing worship and pastoral care, and you were doing everything else. Did you understand what everything else meant when you started?
A little. Well, a lot. I mean, I've been a minister for 24 years, officially. It's not my first rodeo. I always liked this part of the job, so I was kind of excited to get to specialize in things. I kind of knew what I was getting into, but the thing is that every community is unique.
Sure.
So there isn't like a one size fits all. So you're still gonna figure your way in and around.
Were there things that you ended up doing that you
didn't know you would be doing when you started the job?
Yeah, in the contract process, they said that they really, really wanted me to focus on current operations. But then as soon as we started looking at the transition work, it became apparent that they wanted more time, much more time looking at some of the transitions related stuff, which is fine with me. I love that stuff the best. So I was really glad that happened. But in the very beginning, that wasn't what I was anticipating. There are things in every congregation. I never could have imagined that I'd be running around trying to take Jesus off a window. Look at my background. But I was happy to be a part of it.
Do you want to talk about that whole thing?
I'm proud of the process that the congregation went to and the way that they talked to each other and expressed their views and came to a decision. And I hope that as we move forward, as you all move forward as a congregation, that you spend more time talking to each other in conversation when decisions need to happen, and especially tough decisions, instead of putting them off and ignoring them, then there are conversations that could bring things to fruition, people invest themselves.
Right.
That
Jesus window had been a contentious issue for decades. I mean, literally since we moved into this building.
Yeah, the man who did the work, who replaced it, had looked at it 40 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
That's right.
Yeah. And the thing about our contracts in general, that in my contract, it said that I had 1 hour for transition work of the 25. That was a surprise, I think, particularly last year when my part of the transitional work was heavier last year than this year. And it was definitely a lot more than an hour, but it was also fascinating. And as a new minister, to learn so much about congregations as systems and how they change by past events, how those things carry forward, it was really engrossing. Terry, my contract was that we were going to share the transition work and take different parts of that work. But we collaborated a lot on that in the beginning, for sure, setting out a plan with the transition team of what that work would look like, in addition to our own areas of regular ministry.
One of the joys about this is that we did become really efficient partners, and we really enjoyed working together. I don't think it would work very often, but we're really well matched, so that was fun.
For sure.
So was there simply more transition work to be done than we knew?
I wasn't prepared. I didn't know how to do transition work.
Right.
No, sir, in general. So I took, the congregation actually paid for me to take this 9-month transition ministry training class, which I did all of last year. It was learning as you go and implementing some of the things that I was learning with what Terry was bringing to the table and what we were working out. Part of it was probably that I didn't really know what that meant when we were making the contract. I think that the congregation didn't really fully know either the work that needed to be done. And some people didn't want to do it and were open about that. Just didn't think we had any interim or transition work to do. So that was part of the really, really cool thing actually to witness here. It's working on that, getting people on board, and seeing people take ownership of the kinds of tasks that we call transition tasks or interim tasks, and looking at the congregation and just kind of stepping back and taking the time to do that and understand why it's important. That was really rewarding.
Oh, for sure. I remember, it's like, I wanted to do transition work. My first interview for the full-time position, when they told me no, I talked all about transition work and how wonderful it can. I thought it was interesting when they did the first contract that they didn't make that a bigger part of the package, because that's really what turned me on. And that's really what I wanted to do. There was resistance.
That's what I'm going to say. I bet that's why it didn't make it in any big way into the contract, was that, as you mentioned, people just didn't think we needed to do transition work. You know?
I think one of the most rewarding things has been comment from people who found value in it and how people kept showing up for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the congregation did some good work. And so I'm really pleased to have done a part.
Yeah. And I mean, also when we came in, the congregation had been such massive transition for a long time that I think when we came, it was sort of like, okay, now we have these ministers who's add up to more than full time. Let's just move forward. That Leyland time was so intense and was such a giant transition, not to mention that construction going on. The thought that we were going to have to begin a transitional thing after everyone here already felt that they were in it with a lot for people.
Yeah.
when we look back at 2023, when each of you started, what are your early memories about any awkwardness or uncertainty as you were settling in? What were the hardest parts or maybe the funniest parts you kind of focus on of making that transition?
For me, part of it was the obvious discomfort with my Christianity coming at me from lots of directions. I think they thought that I was going to recruit their children. But it was good. I was happy that people were willing to talk to me about it. Hopefully now by this point, people understand that my theology is not far flung from the UUA. There's a lot of affirmity for me in that. But that was a little awkward. The idea that all Christians are hateful or narrow or intolerant. That was uncomfortable. Mostly, I felt like I settled it pretty quickly, became fairly comfortable with everybody here, and hopefully it ended up for me. I'm trying to think of what was funny.
The first worship service you did, even though you had been a guest minister, I remember in the run-through that we do beforehand, you held your hand up like this, as if to give a blessing, and you said, oh, can I do that here?
Yes.
And I said, yes, you can.
I would say, just following up from what Terry said, that being, it was a little funny being the UU minister. Jack, you were UU and you're on staff, but a lot of the other staff that came on was not UU. Most of them weren't. And so it was a little bit funny to be in a position where I was expected to be the educator for other staff on Unitarian Universalism. That was a unexpected part. It was actually part of my contract, but that was a little awkward. Also, I would say that for me coming in, because I did my internship here, that was sort of awkward and funny at first also, to follow my own supervisor after kind of a rough transitional period and moving into his former office. That was interesting and different. Also, for me, when I came in, there was not much happening here. Like, the cottage was pretty, that where we meet in the office was pretty empty. The minister's office had, I understand, been somewhat cleared out from what it was before. But from my experience, there were a lot of boxes there. I was expected, and I did, go through these boxes of books and spend a couple of days clearing out the office. It was an unusual time to move in. And because I knew the congregation before, I think it was easier for me than it would have been had I not known the congregation. And I just entered in with an assumption that I was just going to make myself at home. I think it was nice that I already had the relationship pre-existing.
Oh, I agree.
There was a lot of expectation, I think, that I would just stay, that this period of uncertainty would end. I think that for when both of us came, there's been this longing, understandably, that we can just stop the uncertainty and the transition. So that was a little bit awkward at first.
At what point did you start feeling like you were, for lack of a better term, in a good place? When you were comfortable doing what you were doing at UUSM?
At least 6 months for me. I feel like I was awkward and was stumbling around for the first 6 months, just trying to get a lay of the land, because the culture here is very different in some ways than many of the cultures that I've served in before. There's much more individual freedom and agency and siloing of powers and rules and all that kind of stuff. I'm much more structured, just generally as a person. And so that was awkward and important. I learned a lot, and I appreciate the opportunity to work. I guess that was one of the awkward parts, too. But it took about 6 months, I think, for me to get comfortable. Although I wonder, because I've tried to remember when that Sunday was, Jack, when you stopped me before a Sunday service and you said, you're smiling, you look so more relaxed, like you really fit in. And I can't remember what month that was.
That I remember it. I remember the conversation, but I don't remember when it was. Yeah. But you did. You looked like you were finally having a good time. That's good.
Yeah, I would say the same thing for me. About 6 months into, I was comfortable in the worship part of my role for sure from having done the previous shorter contract, but taking on pastoral care, where that was an adjustment for me. That was a thing for me to take. That took me a little while, I think. I was really grateful for Kathy Kinner being such a strong partner there. Me learning what are the boundaries of that role and how do the lay folks help out the minister, what's the minister. So that was a little bit of a harder transition for me just to get the ropes, I feel like, and know what the boundaries were and what, and not to feel constantly responsible. But I would say, and then learning the transition work. So halfway through that second year, last year, I started to feel like we were in the group and I was in the group more.
Mm-hmm. Terry, you were working with a lot of groups. Did you have a favorite group?
Well, they're all very different, for sure. I mean, I enjoy the transition team, obviously, because it's fun to dream.
Oh, I'm sorry. The correct answer was staff. We're enjoying the staff more than
that. Was that really a group?
That was a question. Yeah, that's a good question.
What was my favorite group? I love working with the staff.
They are a great group.
You think I'm going to leave that other one out?
Come on.
Oh, that's why I do the end.
But you enjoyed working with the transition team.
And, you know, I think we should give a shout out to the staff, too, because you're the longer serving staff. And you've only been here
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. Paul was longer.
Oh, but the senior staff, you're the longer serving person. And so everyone was, many of the systems had only recently begun to be established because a lot of things went online that weren't. There was a lot of harmonizing to be done.
Right.
And I'm really proud of the staff and the way they stuck it out and stuck together. And I think operate really well as a team now. So I the staff's great.
Agreed.
As you look back over your time now, what do you wish you could have done that you didn't get to do?
I felt like this year I didn't continue as much with some of the transition related work we were doing on a congregational level around culture and conflict. And I could have done that a little bit more this year, preached once or twice more on those topics. We really focused in. We had a plan last year. We really focused in on some of those. We did them, but I probably didn't follow up as much as I wish that I had or I could have on some of those themes, because we were working on different stuff this year with the transitional piece. That was one. My work is so different with the pastoral care and worship in terms of continuing on these sort of regular programs, so that I'm not sure I have as much in that area. What about you, Terry?
I think so much of what I ended up doing was probably invisible to most of the congregation. It's like the board.
Yep.
But there was a lot of internal organization and things that really needed to happen that were priorities. And I did that. I wish that I could have done more of the really organizing in a larger way, help setting people more up for success, to move from that circle of just visitor into the circle of activity and helping people set all those things. But I'm pretty confident your new path is going to help you with that. So it's good to pass it.
That's the thing I would say about it, is that I feel so good and I'm excited that everybody decided to move ahead with a developmental ministry, because it means that we didn't have to leave feeling like, oh my gosh, we didn't get done, fill in the blank, because it's understood that it was part of a larger transitional process, with Rev Laura coming for a longer part of that transition, that developmental work. We could focus on, which is I think what we really needed to do, is really the more foundational stuff. We couldn't finish everything in 2 years. That really needed to be done, I think, to set you all up for who you want to become. In your next stage, you had a lot going on with the campus, with all kinds of transitions. Lots of files had been lost. Lots of data was lost. It was really chaotic when we arrived. And everyone was doing the best they could, for sure, an admirable job of keeping worship going, keeping all the programs going. Jack, you were adding all these dimensions. But underneath the surface, a lot of things were in chaos. We really needed to prioritize just getting things back to normal. And I think we did that really well. There's a more of an organizational structure now. That and rebuilding trust were really important things for us to do in the first 2 years of this developmental process. So there are other specific things, sure, that we didn't get done, but those really basic foundational critical pieces we prioritized and we were able to do. So I feel good about that part.
I remember one meaningful night that you foresaw need for doing this, which was night after the election. You made that service very special.
It feels like a long time ago for me now.
Well, it has been about 6.5 years since that happened last November.
So much has happened.
You stood up and you said that you were a mess.
I did. Thank you for reminding me.
That I'm a mess. And
that we needed to be together.
Yeah.
We just needed this time to be together.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me.
It was such a raw and real thing, you know. I'll just never forget that.
What I love about Tobias is really the way that she carries this healing energy. And it's not, she walks beside in such amazing ways. And I think the community's been really blessed to have that power of love in action and the way that she really paid attention to undercurrents like that, though I'm often not as sensitive to. I've got to get in line.
I had a mentor once that said, ministry is the art of being human in public. And when you're up in the pulpit, you have to think about it, right? What part of your humanity are you going to subject people to? But I think there are for sure times and places to just let the messiness hang out.
Yeah.
The truth of it hang out, right? Because otherwise none of us are going to make it.
Yeah.
If we're trying to be something we aren't.
Yeah. That was definitely a night. Like,
yeah.
And you were magnificent.
It's really interesting looking back the short period of time that we've had. And this is my first professional ministry. I cannot imagine for folks who have been thinking about our congregation after 20 years, because it is hard for me to remember all the things, all the moments, all the things. So thank you so much for bringing that one back to my memory. Maybe I blocked it out because we were all in so much trauma too.
There was a lot of trauma. Everyone was just shell shocked looking, you know, just vacant stares and tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. And such a big turnout. I was surprised at the big turnout at night.
Yeah.
Very little notice and the people needed to be in that space again.
I think they did. And also, I have felt so grateful this year that those of us who have the community or anybody who has religious community has it. So that when things like this happen, you already have community there, because there are a lot of people who don't have community and they try to find it because they realize all this hard stuff is happening. One, but when you have a community, you can say, let's just hold the space because we know we're all going to need it that night.
Yeah.
You have the space to do it. And I mean, really, it's such an incredible buffer for life to have.
Both accomplished a lot in your time here. Looking back on it, it's overwhelming how much you've gotten done. What things are you proudest? What are some high points?
Thomas has referenced this already. For me, there's the idea that then I think that we've restored some trust in the lay minister relationship. They were really co-equal partners in making things happen. And I think there was a lot of trauma in the system generally. I dug up a lot of skeletons. I hope that some of that has been healed and some of the stuff that's been hanging on that wasn't healthy has been exercised for now, hopefully maybe longer than for now. And that I think that we're leaving the community are much more stable for them. So I'm really proud. I'm proud of the trust that was developed, stability of the staff right now. I'm proud that I feel like we've really set the community up for success. And if they're willing to keep walking, that they're the place to go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. One of the things I remember, a specific highlight, was letting go ritual last year, where we invited people to sit around in a circle, and it was a pretty big circle, to name any pains, just to name something they wanted to release. We called it really a release and letting go ritual. We had a bowl of water, and people were invited to share what they wanted to release, specifically related to this community, so they could, you all could move forward together. And then people could write it on a piece of dissolving paper and stir it in a pot. And that felt important
just to offer that as another way of moving forward, and that ritual is one of the tools in our toolkit for working through things together. I was really glad we were able to do that. Just the naming and the listening, not having to debate it, just naming, listening, letting go to move on together. I thought that the way that we did workshops last year, where we had a service devoted to a certain part of the transition, where it was, whether it was heritage or culture or shared history, and then we would do this all congregation workshop afterwards. I thought those were really good. I thought the heritage interviews we did, the podcast that you did, Jack, those are all part of your history dining.
Have them.
Sheila Sandout went through and transcribed all of those, and all of these documents that we have, they're not just now on poster board in the minister's office where the last heritage scroll is still in there. If you're ever looking for it, it's actually paper, but there's now a lot of stuff also in digital files that I think you're all going to have for your history, which is really important because things that happened in the past, even if you don't word here for them or don't remember them or didn't know what happened because the information couldn't be shared, still impacts you. And that was one of the major things we were trying to get across, is how systems work, that these events from the past that could be traumatic or very confidential and you don't know what happened, but you know some conflict happens, they still impact the system and the congregational system sometimes for generations, unless you could intentionally work on healing it and changing some of those patterns. So I feel good about that education that we did, and that curiosity about how systems hold things even beyond the people that were originally there is just part of how you understand yourselves. I also feel really good about the worship team, specifically as one of my teams, because even though worship was happening magnificently during the Leyland period, the team itself was not meeting regularly. The worship team itself, establishing that the worship team is really strong now. They're in great shape for the summer, but meeting regularly, we've had great lay leadership in there to get all the files organized and have people have the resources that they need. That felt really good. And early on, moving into the new sanctuary was such a highlight. Being able to move and to be here with you for that first service, which we did it as a water community, just to remind you all that the kids blessed the space with our gathered waters, sunflowers. And that was really a special moment. And I'm so glad I was to be there.
It was. What's something you've learned about yourself in the last 2 years? Life's funny, isn't it? I mean, we're always learning about ourselves. Everyone is. And we're never done. So I learned that again. Oh, yeah. I'm really aware that when I first took the position, I was very concerned, because most of you are straight, that I've never served in a straight congregation, the primarily straight congregation. I've always served in queer congregations. So culture, different culture. And you know my background, raised in evangelical fundamentalism, and UUs were one of the churches that we were warned about. You know, and of course, I put that away a long time ago in a practical way. I didn't have any concerns about the UU in that way, but that's the kind of thing that you're raised with that sort of lives in you. It's been very healing to be in the presence of so many loving people, and very healing to be in the presence of so many loving straight people. I love this community. And so if I learned anything about myself, is that I still have things to heal, and I'm glad that this has been a part of my own healing journey.
Yeah, I learned a lot about myself for sure too. One of the things that I don't know if I learned it or it was reaffirmed is that I would prefer to be a co-minister always. And Terry reminds me, it depends on the person. I'll just say I would like to be a co-minister with Terry. By Terry and our skill set is complementary. Not only do I just so appreciate as a new minister not having to come in and do absolutely everything, I really think that would have been brutal for me, especially in a context like this where so much had fallen apart. I knew that going in, especially with kids at home and stuff, that I wasn't willing to take that on. But now that we've gone through it, I'm so glad to have had that time. And I would love to, for my own self, figuring out what ministry looks like in the future. I know for sure I've learned that I need to have a team of people or be in a church setting where there's a strong administrative organizational thing happening. It would be hard for me to just be a solo minister somewhere where they relied on the minister to do everything that Terry had done. Right. I've learned that about myself and needing to be able to be clear about that and not think this is a reason why I can't do ministry, or I now have to become like Terry and do all the, just accept this is who I am. And this is where I have strong places. This is where I need to rely on others and be able to be, you know, yes, working on things and also both learning new things and recognizing where we just need a team to fill in those spaces. The other important thing for me that I've been working on is boundaries, because I'm a kind of person who gets excited, and you probably all notice this, and interested in various things and can easily run in multiple directions. And in a job like this, where there's a million directions to go to anytime, it's been really important for me to remember to slow down and think about what are the things I need to prioritize, putting in place good boundaries, and that practice of always looking, rethinking about my boundaries is something that I learned and will be on.
It's one of my biggest concerns, I think, for UUSM as you move forward, that you've had Tovis and I working hard for, we had 47 hours a week assigned to us. We did more than that for sure.
Yeah.
And your new minister, you know, she won't be able to work the same degree that we are. She won't have all of my skills or all of Tovis' skills in one package. So I'm just really hoping that the congregation stays very mindful about figuring out the part that they need to do and being willing to do it and being willing to lovingly really do that co-ministry for us.
All right. Well, I'm going to end with some quick hitters. Just three for each of you. Riff, Terry, you're up first. As a child, what was your most comfortable third space? Not home or school, but where else?
Sure. My mom was a church secretary. The school bus dropped me off there every single day. I played in the sanctuary and slept in the...
So that was, you were totally comfortable there and totally. What major event or realization shaped who you are?
In college, there was a point where I, well, because of my faith, I knew that I certainly wasn't a lesbian, but I still felt like I should love everyone. And I still felt like that was important. And I wanted to learn more. And so I took a class on LGBT stuff just to learn more.
Right.
And found a girl who kissed me. And I, like, had that changed my life for it.
Any?
Education. You're in trouble.
What's something that you want to learn to do?
I'm halfway into retirement as I leave this position. And I was telling my wife just last night, I want to take a class on AI for beginners and learn a little bit more about this stuff and how it might be used. Because people keep talking about it. It sounds really interesting. So I might take a 6-week class, see if I can learn something. Good for your brain.
Good for your brain.
For sure.
All right. That's my three there. So Rev Tovis, it's your turn. What made you feel seen when you were growing up?
Probably what makes me feel seen now, which is when people let me know in some way that they really see the part of me that's uniquely me. For instance, my mom said to me once, probably a teenager, I think you're a private person. I think you really need your privacy, something like that. And I never really thought about that. I had never put words to it, but it really stuck with me. It gave me permission to claim that part of myself. She actually was really right. It's true. I don't know if I ever would have come up with that myself, right? So when someone reflects back to you something that you're like, wow, you really saw me and gave me a gift of naming it.
What's something you swore you'd never do as a parent that ended up doing?
Do we have an hour? there are a lot of things, but the one thing is toy guns. I swore that my kids would not have guns. When we were given all these hand-me-downs from friends, I would take all the guns out, even of Lego sets, teeny little guns. I had a little collection of all the little weapons I took out of Lego sets. But then at some point when the kids were 8 or something, they were given a Nerf gun for a birthday, and it was all downhill from there. They, 20 toy guns, yeah.
What's something you're good at, but don't like doing?
Actually, this one follows up on the previous one, which is when I went to summer camp as a kid, one of the activities that I tried one year was target shooting with 22
false. I was really good at it, which was strange because I hadn't been playing with toy guns. I really never particularly cared to shoot guns, and I was really good at it. And I always thought that what a waste of a talent.
Oh, you could have taught your sons to be sharpshooters.
Thanks so much to both of you for agreeing to do this interview. Since we're doing this nearly a month before you actually leave, I'm not going to give a teary goodbye today because there will be another time for tears. For today, I'm just going to say thanks for all the good memories. And I hope that our paths cross in the future. And to our listeners and to everyone else in the world, to keep making connections.